From the four corners of Southern California, this is The Hot Seat, and you're in it with me, Max Schwartz. It starts right now. Today on the phone, I have Director and Senior Economist of the Center for Continuing Study of the California Economy, Stephen Levy. How are you, Mr. Levy? Thank you very much for calling into The Hot Seat this morning.
Good morning.
And Mr. Levy is a busy man, and we've got a lot to cover, so without further ado, let's get started. So just quickly, for those that do not know, what is the Center for Continuing Study of the California Economy?
We do research mainly for public institutions that are doing really long-term planning, 10, 20, or 30 years. So the main activity is to prepare projections of jobs, population, and housing. And the main folks we work with are the big regional planning agencies like SCAG in Southern California and the Air Quality Management District, and also workforce boards. So basically, we're into the future, and it's about numbers that inform policymakers for strategies.
Okay, and I saw your article mentioned in the LA Times, or your quote mentioned in the LA Times when talking about Jerry Brown's budget, which is how I found you. And so that's the main reason why I have you here. What are your, first of all, do you like Governor Brown's budget?
Yes.
And
I'm very supportive of nearly all of the points.
Why?
The budget is starting to pay off the debt that he and past governors accumulated basically by borrowing money from the future, say, from school districts and local governments, and he's on a course to pay that off over the next 2 to 3 years with a big down payment this year, the result being that schools, the K-12 system, gets a lot more money this year.
Okay. And going along with paying off the debt is the idea of the rainy day fund. And from your experience as having been an observer of the California economy for so many years, would this be the most significant rainy day fund proposition that we've seen or that you've seen?
The most significant reserve fund will be the one that actually gets done and funded. We've had rainy day funds in the past, but they've had a legislative option to defer payment, and that's usually what happens. The other very, very sensible point about this is that it will be funded primarily from what would be considered excess capital gains revenues. And going back really to the dot-com boom, I was, along with several other economists, saying that you want to keep those high capital gains revenues out of the operating budget and put them in some kind of reserve or pledge them for one-time spending. So the way the rainy day fund is going to be set up is also good.
Is the reason for that because those funds could go away or stop coming in at any time?
Absolutely. That was a big mistake that really the governor and the legislature made in 2000, which is they built peak revenues into the operating budget in all sorts of areas, education and safety net programs, and pretty much everybody knew those peak revenues would go away. They did, and we had unending deficits for a long, long period.
And I've heard on the radio multiple times the state of California is selling bonds. Is the revenue from those bonds going into the general fund, or are those going to specific projects, or do you not know?
The bonds are almost entirely for specific purposes. The major bonds that have been sold are matching funds to go to local school construction projects. They're all capital projects, and the other large set of state bonds have gone for transportation infrastructure. So there's no operating, they don't go into the operating budget. They go into capital investment programs and often to match local government programs. So they end up in local governments.
Well, from your opinion and from looking at this budget, does the governor put enough money away starting now to eventually pay off those bonds once they mature?
Yes. The major liability in the budget that's been very difficult to address here across the nation for the federal government are the retirement obligations. Listeners should know that the state bond repayment gets first priority, so there's absolutely zero chance of any state bonds ever going into default because they get the first priority in the budget.
Okay. And I'd like to go back and talking about about the budget. And the governor was putting money back into programs that were cut during the dark days of the recession. However, he's not doing a lot of spending. He's restoring them to their previous levels, if that, for most, if not all, of the programs. Now, do you think this is the right route for the governor to take?
Yes. We all wish there were more money. What the governor is trying to do by directing the early money to paying off the wall of debt is that in a couple of years, that's going to open up a lot more space in the budget to rebuild some of the programs. But if you just let that debt linger there, then you're just trading short-term, you know, happiness for really not retiring the debt. So it's absolutely correct to pay down the previous borrowings first. And also, you don't want to really rebuild the programs completely until you see the length and the strength of the economic recovery. So small steps in a positive direction, I think, are the right course.
And speaking about the recovery, would you say that we're on the right track for a recovery?
California is again leading the nation in job and income growth. It's primarily on the coast in places like Orange County and San Diego and up here in the Bay Area and a little bit Los Angeles. So it's a little bit bifurcated in terms of where the recovery is. But from the state budget perspective, yes, state revenues are in a recovery. Unemployment rate is going down not as fast as we want, but yes. We have a solid industry base in technology and entertainment and in tourism, and we're doing about as well as we can given the slow nature of the national and world economy right now.
Okay, and I'm going to talk to you about all those points, but before I do, you've been director of this organization since 1985. Would you say that this, from your observations, Governor Brown has the hardest challenge of any governor you've seen in terms of getting California back on its feet?
No, I think the first of all, governors do very little in terms of economic recovery. They all like to say they do, but state policy really plays for the long term. Neither Pete Wilson, who really I think had the more difficult recession between 1990 and 1994 with the aerospace collapse, or Jerry Brown, or even Arnold Schwarzenegger, they don't have that much to do with economic growth. It's mainly what industries you have and how they're doing in the country. But in direct answer, my recollection was that 1990 to 1994 was equally or perhaps more difficult.
Okay. And I will say, though, that I do believe governors may not directly have a role, but they do have the power to sign or veto legislation that contains economic policy.
They do, but companies don't make decisions on a dime, just like immigrants don't make, or more people that move don't make decisions on a dime. So when you see companies coming here or expanding or retracting, or people moving, those are decisions that were set in motion 2 or 3 years ago. So there's a problem saying, you know, a governor gets up and says something today and somebody does something tomorrow. They're not connected. People, you know, CEOs don't get up in the morning and say, Jerry Brown said something, I'm going to change my plans by noon today.
Okay. I'd like to go back to the unemployment rate now while we're staying on the topic of business. Do you believe that California's unemployment rate is going down because people are finding work, or do you believe it's going down because people are more because people are just stopping to look for work?
It's primarily because people are finding work. There is a little bit of the front edge of the baby boomers who are retiring. That's one of the reasons that people are leaving the workforce. And there's something that doesn't get talked about very much, which should, is that California and the nation has seen a huge increase in people claiming disability status and getting disability payments. And that started long before the current recession. And so one of the things policymakers all across the country might want to look at is have we made the disability rules too lax? Because that's where a huge number of men leaving the workforce have gone. And I don't know enough to know whether it's justified or not, but that is a big piece of the explanation.
Okay. And you did mention the baby boomers retiring, which in turn creates or hopefully creates jobs for people that are just now entering the workforce after college or something of that nature. And staying on the topic of business, California, especially recently, has made it relatively difficult for businesses to be here due to the stiff taxes and regulations. Would you agree with that?
No. I live in the most expensive area in the state with some of the strictest environmental regulations, and last month the area where I live, Santa Clara County, was the fastest growing metropolitan area in the United States in terms of job growth. The Bay Area has 40% of the nation's venture capital, has outsized shares of patents and IPOs and mergers and acquisitions. It has the highest income in the nation, and the peninsula from San Francisco to San Jose is one of the nation's largest job growth corridors. Whereas areas that are less expensive in California and have lower local taxes are, for many reasons, not sharing in the growth. So it's, people like to talk about it, but you then have to explain why the highest cost, most environmentally conscious area is leading in growth.
That's true, and I personally believe, and you can tell me your thoughts, being not only an economist but being a resident of the area, I think Silicon Valley and the creation of jobs, the tech jobs within the companies in Silicon Valley, is a big reason for that.
Absolutely, and your listeners should know that in Orange County and in the, the West Side area around Santa Monica, mm-hmm. and the what you guys are calling Silicon Beach, mm-hmm. that Southern California is beginning to do really well, and the coastal areas are the most expensive and have the strictest environmental regulation, and the coastal areas are leading in job growth, whereas the inland areas, which are less expensive, are lagging, and we can talk about why, but the idea that high cost and regulation are driving folks away is just inconsistent with the fact that the coast is leading the inland areas in income and job growth and low unemployment.
And what you said we can talk about why, so I'm going to ask.
Sure.
Why?
Well, the rapid growth in say, Riverside, San Bernardino, and the Central Valley, and in part Sacramento, was driven by their low-cost housing, and so the huge booms in the middle of the last decade, 2005, 2006, 2007, were related to home construction. We lost about 600,000 jobs related to going from building 200,000 units a year to 40,000 in the state, and most of that decline was in these inland empires, so in an inland county. So the explanation's pretty simple. Their key industry tanked, and along with that, the revenues fell, and they had higher than average local government layoffs. So the combination of construction and government job losses just put them at a disadvantage. They didn't have tech. They didn't have much tourism. They don't have ports because they're inland. Mm-hmm. So it's really an industry explanation.
And they are bouncing back, though, because you see a lot of online websites and wholesalers and big warehouse stores are building big factories and big warehouses in the San Bernardino Riverside area.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's an appropriate activity. Amazon is building some what they call fulfillment centers or distribution centers up and down the inland area. Those are appropriate activities for these lower cost reasons, but you don't see any spill out of the of Facebook or Twitter or Google or Apple or Microsoft or any of the big tech companies. And in Southern California, they're still in the nice areas in Orange County and on the west side of Los Angeles. So
that is very true, but they're gradually expanding their operations in Southern California, at least as a Southern California observer. So Google's opening or has opened another office in Southern California. So I think they are starting to venture down south. But I did want to go back to what you were talking about, the expensiveness of the Bay Area in San Francisco. And I heard something on the radio yesterday where San Francisco is sort of going through a crisis with not having enough low income housing for the low income workers.
I think that's true in most of the coastal areas, including San Diego, Orange County. It certainly is true in San Francisco, but it was true before Google and Twitter really took off. There is certainly all up and down the peninsula where I live, all of this wealth is allowing the tech workforce to bid up housing prices and rents, and we simply have not been putting very much supply on the ground. So we're behind in building units, and the price pressure is very large.
Do you think that as the problem becomes more severe, do you think that will cause a problem for the cities and ultimately the economy as a whole?
I think the regional economy will suffer if we don't build enough housing. It doesn't all have to be in San Francisco. The transportation system can help move people from lower cost areas to higher cost areas. We are a regional economy, but at that level, sure, if we don't build enough housing, and that's true in Southern California as well, companies that are at the high end will begin to say it's just too hard to recruit.
I understand. And I want to continue now our talk about business in the state of California. And one of the problems that we're seeing in California, especially Southern California, is runaway production. What do you see as, what are your thoughts on runaway production? Anything? Do you believe that we'll be able to stop it? Do you think that it's better if they're not here? Or what is your take on that? If you have one.
I'm skeptical that this is the largest problem that California faces. Many of the states that have essentially paid for play are finding that those are really, really bad investments and are scaling back. But you're essentially in a bribery mode, and I find that not a course that helps any state or all states together, because you get in this race to the bottom. So California raises its incentives or payoffs or whatever you want to call it, and Louisiana says, no sweat, we'll double ours, and Georgia says, piece of cake, we'll triple ours, and they come back in California and say, look what Georgia and Louisiana did, and we raise ours, and Louisiana says, no sweat, we'll double ours again. And so you have a massive transfer from public taxpayers to private companies. In the end, there's not a single added job created.
Okay. And
so I don't think... and the other point is that it's if you look at the numbers in the studies, you're saying 140,000 jobs in Los Angeles and 4,000 in Louisiana. So Louisiana's gone up by 400%. So what? It's tiny. Mm-hmm. And companies are going to move to lower cost areas. But just think, Max, if you extended that to everybody, then you'd have everybody saying, I'm going to move, and you'd be in a giant game of chicken. If you pay movie companies to stay, why wouldn't you pay aircraft companies to stay, or, you know, tech companies to stay? It's a nowhere policy where you end up just transferring taxpayer money to private companies.
I'm glad you mentioned the aircraft industry, because we will be talking about that in a moment. But that is a very interesting perspective. And ultimately speaking, and I want to go back to the job creation, and given the size of California, I don't believe personally, in my opinion, the late Dr. Lou Terrell, a former political scientist at San Diego State, agrees or has the same opinion, that we're not an outlier given the size of our state in terms of our unemployment rate.
You know, this is a kind of a difficult public discussion, but the unemployment rate is about where it should be if you look at the educational and work experience profile of the state. That is, we have a much higher percentage of people, really, unfortunately, without a high school degree, and we are a younger workforce, and unemployment rates around the country are higher for people without high school and at the young age. Actually, if you look, at least the last time I looked at unemployment and poverty, it's about where it should be given the number of immigrants and folks without high school education. That is, people without high school education or who don't speak English don't have a higher unemployment rate in California than they do in other states. It's just we have more of them, and so that affects the overall rate. It's still terrible. I mean, I'm not saying it's not terrible, but it's not an outlier. It's not like, say, Latinos who haven't graduated from high school and don't speak English have a higher unemployment rate here than they do in Kansas. They don't.
Okay. That's very true.
And so let me say one more thing. With this very tech economy, you know, even in a restaurant you go in now and people are using computers. In a retail store you go in and the clerks are using computers. We have much greater opportunity to make sure that the next generation of kids don't get left behind than we do to help people who really have a lack of skills right now. And so my attention would be on preventing the next generation from following in the footsteps, make sure everybody gets a high school education and some post-secondary something, an apprenticeship program or, you know, 1 year at a community college to get a credential.
Okay, and I will quickly say that it was Dr. Lou Terrell's idea during an interview with him via email, he's the one who said it's not an outlier, and I happen to agree with his decision. It's not the other way around. But I will say that is very true, and I believe that given the advancing technologies that are in the state of California and the different tech companies, a higher education and higher degrees are needed to work in that field.
Sure. We're the workforce board that I serve on is just got a grant to help low and moderate wage workers find entry level jobs in tech. There are all sorts of great efforts around the state. Some of the unions have on-site programs to teach English to some of the immigrant workforce who doesn't have English skills. There are all sorts of programs now trying to help adult workers who don't have great digital literacy, pick that up so they can, you know, at least work the computers in the lower skill jobs. So there are individual efforts. It's just not enough money, not enough people doing it for everybody. But we're beginning to know how to make those transitions to this. Everywhere you go, there's a computer. I mean, heck, everybody has but most people now have cell phones that have all this technology that people are using.
Absolutely. And I do want to go back, and during our discussion about runaway production, you said that that is not the greatest problem to the California economy. What would you say is the greatest problem or risk to our economy?
In the private sector, you have, at least in tech and most companies, you have a saying or a mantra about you invest or you die. You're always striving to develop new products, new services, new ways to make the production process and the interface with customers more productive. We lack massive public investment. We have lots of catch-up to do on our infrastructure, whether that's the transportation system for moving people and goods or making sure that everybody has broadband. We have lots of investing we could do in education along with innovation to link people to jobs. So I think the state and local government should have a invest or die mantra that we are competing not only with other states but mainly with other countries that are racing ahead, and we have to make sure our workforce and our infrastructure is world class.
Okay, and has the legislature sought your organization's input?
I think everyone reads a wide variety of stuff. I don't go up and testify on this. I write the governor as a private citizen, but no, I don't get involved in that. But everybody knows the work that we're doing around workforce. I sit on the state workforce investment board, and that's the main area. So my ideas are, you know, heard there.
Okay.
It's tough. Change is tough.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's change is tough for about anything. And I have one more area to talk to you about, and that has to do with the aerospace industry. And Long Beach is losing the Boeing C-17 Globemaster plant in 2015. And because the Boeing 777X will be built in Seattle, there's nothing that's going to be able to replace that. Do you believe the state of, or what are your thoughts on the aerospace industry sector of the California economy, specifically the Southern California?
There was a huge hit 20 years ago, and the world that we're in now is probably the world of the future. We are a technology center, but there's not going to be significant production here, and the number of jobs in the field is not going to grow nationally. I think we have to move beyond transitions that really we are unable or shouldn't be in the midst of stopping. So, for example, I don't favor raising the defense budget in the United States so there's more stuff built in Southern California. I mean, there's lots of ways to invest money in the nation to build jobs, for example, a massive transportation and other infrastructure investment. So I suspect that the losses in aerospace here are something that we have to just understand and move on.
And I know you don't like to give opinions. However, I would like to ask you, if you don't want to answer, that's fine. Do you think it will be a major problem when the aerospace jobs start to decrease in Southern California?
Transitions are always major problems for the people affected. When we had the really large losses in 1990 and to 1995, a lot of the people there never got a job that paid as much. I mean, it's the same when other industries, textiles or shoe manufacturing or, you know, coal mining, when those industries go in transition, the people in them at that time have a lot of difficulty. On the other hand, the economies in which they operate, if they're large like Southern California, move on. And so 10 years after the aerospace decline in the early 1990s, Southern California was leading the nation in job growth, had recovered all the job losses, had an unemployment rate similar to the nation. But those individual workers who lost their job, many of them never got back to their former level. So you have to distinguish, will it be hard for the workers versus will it be hard for the general economy?
Okay. And I'd love to talk to you more about that issue and about all other issues concerning our economy, but unfortunately we are out of time. But thank you very much for joining me in the hot seat today, Mr. Levy. It was a pleasure. The Hot Seat After Hours starts right now. You can email the Hot Seat inbox at thehotseatwithmaxschwartz@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at MaxSchwartzTV. You can also read and follow my blog at maxschwartztv.blogspot.com. You can subscribe to the Hot Seat's newsletter by clicking the link on our page. Go to annenbergradio.org/podcast and click on the link underneath the Hot Seat's description and enter your email address. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you will join me next time with Rick Dunham.